Any memories from yesterday? What happened, Mathura Bihari? I remember you were here. What was it about yesterday? What was that? Who is a Stita Pragya? Okay. Who is, what are his characteristics? Characteristics of a Stita Pragya. Let's hear from Kunjeshwar Krishna. We have never heard from him. What happened yesterday? You don't have to look at the book, just remember. Yes? Go ahead. Please encourage him. He has never spoken in the class. Yes? Oh, yes, give him the microphone. No, 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 no. At least one word. Do you remember anything from yesterday? He has a voice. We discussed about devotional service. Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. And what did we say about devotional service? In which verse did this come up, devotional service? Of course, in each and every purport, Prabhupada always speaks of devotional service. But in which verse it came up? 61. Very good. That was a good attempt. Success. Okay. So yesterday, what else did we hear?
Four questions asked
by Arjuna, asking the how to recognize someone who is fixed in transcendental consciousness. Huh? Yes, Sanchari? The nature of the senses. Any qualities of the senses we heard yesterday?
Strong.
Impetuous.
Along the river.
Oh, we learned swimming.
Yeah, swimming.
How to cross the river.
Yeah.
The senses, we should not go against the senses. We should try to engage them in devotional service, go with the current, but with Krishna in the middle. Right? With Krishna. You should have Krishna as the aim. Try to engage them in his service. Yes. Sanchari?
In the verse 62, first time Krishna speaks about surrendering when worshipping Krishna.
In 62?
61.
Yeah, that actually he gives the secret. If we really want the success in controlling the senses, then restrictions are not enough. We heard there are two things in sense control. One is that you have to be a little, you know, there has to be some rules, some regulations, some restrictions. Huh? But that is not enough. What else is required? The higher taste, yes. Unless we have a higher taste, because we are Sachit Ananda. And we like Ananda. This cannot be taken away from us. So unless there is some taste somewhere, then we are always looking for taste. Unless we find the higher taste, we will not be successful in conquering the lower engagements of the senses. Yeah, I wanted to ask you today. So there were so many analogies yesterday. One was the tortoise. This is the example of sense control. Using the senses for a clear purpose. Not just the senses just being active automatically, whimsically, going behind the senses. So tortoise, what was another example? The snake charmer. Which indicated that one should be very expert. Right? Because the senses are dangerous. They can take us to hell. We also heard about another example was a blazing fire. What was the blazing fire? Krishna is compared to a blazing fire. What does he do as a blazing fire? He burns all the impurities. He burns the material desires. The identification with the body. Yes, when we fix our mind, mat paraha, on Krishna, then from within, he burns this unnecessary identification with the body. And then it becomes easy to be detached from the sense object. There was another example, which was the diet. What was the diet standing for? The restrictions. And who follows the restrictions, especially? The jnanis. In the path of jnana, it's all about restriction. So many don'ts. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. Don't look on the left, don't look on the right. Walk straight. So many restrictions. And on the contrary, there is controlling the senses. Of course, restrictions are always required to some extent, but they are not the key. On the other hand, Prabhupada gave us the example of satisfied hunger. What was satisfied hunger? Krishna consciousness. Yes. One who is engaged in Krishna consciousness is like a person who has eaten a good meal. So when you present him with something more, he says no. Without any grudge, without any regret, without any sadness, without any frustration, because he's fully satisfied with a good meal, satisfied hunger, he doesn't want anything anymore. So this is a Krishna conscious person. His senses are peaceful because they are engaged in Krishna. The mind is fixed on Krishna, and by being fixed on Krishna, we obtain a taste, which gives us the ultimate satisfaction. So yesterday we saw this Sthita Pragya, different, how he, what are his characteristics, how he talks, how he responds to different situations, and how he walks. So we are going to study more today about this. Basically, Krishna started, teaching us the fact that the path of action or engagement is superior to the path of inaction. And this he will preach for several chapters. So now, in 62 and 63, the 62 and 63 are two verses that go together, we are going to hear what happens to one whose mind is not fixed on Krishna. Mat para, one who is fixed, he says you should fix your consciousness on me. When it is fixed on me, then the senses will be controlled. And if the consciousness is not fixed on me, if you don't follow this instruction, mat para, then what is the risk? The risk is to fall. To fall means that instead of the intelligence being in control of the situation, instead of the super soul directing us, the senses, the sense objects are going to direct us. So these two verses stand for the process of fall down of an individual. In the first chapter, we saw the process of fall down of a society as a whole. And it was very similar. What was the cause of the fall down of the society? The elders are gone. So, and the elders, what do? They give vision. They give the vision. So similarly, for an individual, the vision comes from where? From the spiritual master and also from contact with Krishna. Mat paraha. When the mind is fixed on Krishna, we have direction. We have some direction. The intelligence will be pure. We will have some direction. And as soon as the intelligence is not fixed on Krishna, then there will be destruction. There will be fall. So the process of fall, it begins, first of all, we have to understand clearly that the process of fall down begins within the mind. When the mind is not fixed. This is where the fall down begins. It begins within the mind. First, there is a subtle contemplation. And then, other things follow. So, let us read this verse here. We'll read the two verses together, I think this time. Dhyayato vishayam punsa sangaste shupajayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodho bhijayate krodhat bhavati sammoha sammohat smriti vibhramaha smriti bhramshat buddhinasho buddhinashat pranashyati. These are memory verses because they are very important for us. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. And from such attachment, lust develops. And from lust, anger arises. From anger, complete delusion arises. And from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. These are very wise words by Krishna. So, where does the trouble begin here? Dhyayato vishayan punsa. When a person contemplates. So what is it that contemplates?
Mind.
It's the mind. Krishna said, what should the mind contemplate?
Krishna.
The mind should contemplate Krishna. Krishna dhyan. Dhyayato dhyan. Dhyan means meditation. The mind should be fixed in meditation on Krishna. Harinam, Krishna Katha, Bhagavad Gita, Darshan, beautiful form of Krishna. This is where the mind should be. And the trouble begins when the mind deviates from that and starts contemplating what? Vishayan. Different objects, not Krishna, but some other objects. So this contemplation, can be in two ways. I mean, the object themselves can be of two kinds. There are two kinds of objects. Do you know the two kinds of objects? Don't tell me moving and non-moving, that's not the ones. There are two kinds of objects. What could it be? No, now we are talking of the material objects. We have already contemplated. Subtle and gross. Yes, very good. There are the gross objects, and there are the subtle objects. So there is either this contemplation either comes from what is called Shruti, which in this sense means perception from external senses. Right? The objects, we contemplate on the objects through the external senses. We see something. We smell something. Halava is being cooked. So the smell of the halava is coming in. And what does the mind see? The mind sees the halava, right? The smell is coming through the nose, the mind sees the halava. So this contemplation can be effected with the help of the external senses. We are looking at some object, whatever it be. And this contemplation can also be inside the mind, while the external senses are not being used. And most of the time what happens is that the external senses see something, hear something, and then that very object is brought inside the mind. And once it is inside the mind, then there is smriti. There is the process of remembering, contemplating. In some ways, we can call it daydreaming. You know what is that? Daydreaming? You sit in one place, you see people, they are just sitting somewhere. What are they doing?
Thinking.
They are thinking. Yes, they are thinking. And sometimes they are thinking guided by their intelligence about something constructive. But many times, they're just imagining something, they're thinking, remembering. This is called daydreaming. It's in the day, but it's a dream. Because it's not something constructive, it's not something which even is related to the reality. You're just dreaming. Oh, if only I could get this and I could have that, and then this will happen and that will happen and I will do this and that and that and this and that. It is the manorata. It's like a chariot. The mind takes us like a chariot and takes us in rounds. We go round. And this is very dangerous when we do that. This daydreaming is very dangerous. So, Ananda Chaitanya Prabhu told us that this is the process of thinking. And in fact, what are the three aspects of the mind? Three functions? Thinking, feeling, willing. And we will see that this is what happens here. The involvement of the mind begins with thinking. We think of some object. Meanings that we are viewing this object from different angles. We are viewing the object either through the material senses or directly within the mind. But in any case, we are viewing it with the mind. The mind becomes fixed there. And from this thinking, Krishna says after that, what happens? If we spend time in contact with an object, then the next thing is sanghas teshu pajayate. There will be attachment. There will be some attraction. There will be attachment. Which means, this is which stage of the mind? Feeling. In contact with the object, we will start feeling the object. Oh, feels good or feels bad? If it feels bad, leave it. Problem is when it feels good. They like it. The mind is already enjoying that item. So there is a liking which arises from the contemplation on the object. And then, what is the next thing? Sangat sanjayate kama. Then, lust arises, which means the desire to enjoy that object. We want. So this is the thinking, feeling, willing. Willing. We desire that object, and then slowly we make a determination. I want it. Initially, we had nothing to do with that thing. Something was just passing on the road, and then we saw, and somehow our eyes became glued to it. Then we started thinking, oh, that's a nice thing. It happens when you go shopping. You had no plan to buy something, but if you look at it long enough, start thinking, yeah, actually it's nice, I like it, I want it. I want it. No, I really want it. No, I can't live without it. So, we desire. And then we make plans. We start making a determination and then we make plans. Again, the process of thinking. We make plans. So when we make plans, we involve the intelligence. We knock on the door. Psst, psst. The mind calls on the intelligence. Because the mind is attracted or repulsed, but the mind cannot figure out anything, how to get it. For this, the intelligence is required. So in the book here, we have the contemplation, which creates some liking for the thing, and therefore some attraction, some feeling good. And therefore, because it feels good, we want to enjoy it. So we want it. We become determined to get it. We make a plan to get it. And then the next stage, which is given here, is kamat krodho abhijayate. But is this what happens directly? Or is there something missing here? First, you desire to enjoy it, and next, after that, you become angry? No. When you don't get it, you become angry. Yes. Or when you get it, you don't become angry? You are not satisfied. So two things. So first there is the thinking, the feeling, the willing. Then there is the doing. And you become determined. Krishna has not given that part here. But then there is the doing. Then you do something. You get the object. And you start interacting with the object. And then two things happen actually. Either you manage getting the object and it's not satisfied. Because in your daydream, you imagine something fantastic. That when you get it, it's going to be so far out. But when you actually get it, it's a material object. Number one, it has faults. And number two, it cannot satisfy the soul. So therefore, there is a disappointment. Either immediately, or after one day, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. But so when there is frustration, you will study that in Nectar of Instruction. It's called, it's anger after frustration, it is called. Anger after frustration. Virodh yukta krodh. Yes. So this is the sequence here. Or we will not get it at all, because it's not always that. You know, there was a song in the 70s in pop star, I think Mick Jagger or somebody was singing. He was singing this song, was eating the microphone on the stage, and he was saying, "You can't always get what you want." He was making such faces, he was so terrible. And he was saying, you can't always get what you want, but you get what you need. Get what you need means either, you know, to teach you a lesson anyway. So sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good. So sometimes we get and sometimes we don't get. When we get, dissatisfaction arises. When we don't get, dissatisfaction arises. You see, this is the snare here. The snare, but still we try, right? Yeah. Still we try. So here there is a degradation. And then the next step is krodh, anger. So if we analyze this from the point of view of the modes of nature, already we have seen there is thinking, feeling, willing. Up to there it's in the mind. Then there is doing. That is, you know, something in action. Although there is also doing within the mind. So many things happen within the mind. But in any case, trying to enjoy that object, that is the doing part. Either with all the senses or just with the mind. So, when we contemplate, what mode of nature is in action? Are you sure? When you contemplate? Contemplate means that the mind is kind of fixed. Initially, the mind is in goodness. And because the mind is in goodness, it can contemplate. So, and remember, here we talk of a fall, meaning that we were situated somewhere good. So, initially there is some goodness, and we contemplate. But because we are contemplating the wrong thing, so gradually this attraction that is generated from the material nature, meaning that the goodness transforms into passion. There is passion. And when there is passion, the desires are stirred up and the mind becomes agitated. It is moving. It's moving. The lust is passion. And then gradually comes the anger. What is anger? It is ignorance. So it's a degradation which is connected to the modes of nature. From goodness to passion to ignorance. We are being pulled down. The consciousness is being brought down, or it's being covered more and more thickly. Then Krishna says, krodhad bhavati sammoha. Sammoha means, Prabhupada says, perfect illusion. Perfect illusion. Why is it so perfect?
You can't get out of it.
You can't get out of it, and when is the illusion really perfect?
When we think about it, we are completely in.
You're completely inside, and you don't know that it's illusion. And that's the perfection of illusion. Ignorance ignores itself. You know that? When you are in ignorance, you can't know you are in ignorance. And that this is the disastrous situation of the entire world. In ignorance, but don't know that I am in ignorance. And the process of Krishna consciousness is to become aware of ignorance. So perfect illusion means I am illusion. But even if my neighbor comes and says, come on, Prabhu, you're going wrong. No. Won't believe it. Once the illusion sets in, no way, you can't shake. You can't do anything. The person will not acknowledge. So what means this illusion? What does it mean that when anger comes, after anger comes illusion? We lose the... That's the next step. That's the next step. What is illusion? Yeah, you don't see what's what. You lose the discrimination. Yes. Viveka, it's called the Viveka, the discrimination. You lose the discrimination between what is favorable, what is unfavorable, you know, what is Maya, what is Krishna. And illusion is also the illusion of you lose your identity. Huh? You lose your identity, you forget who you are and therefore how you should behave. Forget. So the discrimination is lost and the sense of identity is shaken. And then after that, the next thing, Sammohat Smriti Vibhrama, bewilderment of memory. So what is it? Meaning we forget. Right? The memory is bewildered. The memory, we can't connect anymore with our memory. So what is it that we forget? Our relationship with the Lord. Yeah, we forget our relationship with the Lord. This is very much also illusion. What else we forget? We forget the goal. Yeah, forget the goal. What I'm here for, just forget the goal. What else?
Distinction between right and wrong.
The distinction between right and wrong, that's not forgetfulness. That's more like discrimination. What else do we forget when we are under illusion?
Huh? Our constitutional position when we are
surrendered. Yeah, but more practically, because these things we said already, we forget our identity, we forget our relationship with Krishna, we forget the goal. What are some other practical things? You forget the relationships. Yes, lust is so powerful. Prabhupada says, you know, it's such a powerful thing that, you know, you can hit at anybody when lust takes over. You don't know who is. In the Shastras, they say you don't know who is your mother, your father, your this, your that. When lust hits or anger hits, you can kill your relatives, you can kill your children, you can do anything. What do we forget practically? Forget what we're doing. Forget our duty. Other thing we forget usually is we forget the rules. We forget the rules and regulations. It's very practical. We know we shouldn't be doing that. But at some point, you know it up to a certain point, and after some time, forget. Forget the rules and regulation. What else do we forget? We forget previous experience. Because we did it before, no? Yeah, we tried it before. And what was the result? It was disaster. Yet, let's go for it again. Let's try again. Because we forget. That is, the memory shuts down due to lust. The memory shuts down. Forget the previous experience. You forget your knowledge, the instructions that we have received. This is the bewilderment of the memory. Then Krishna says, Smriti Bhramshat Buddhinasho. Then the Buddhi, intelligence is gone, lost. And this is the wrong reasoning. The duty of intelligence is to think properly, to reason, to come to a proper conclusion. But no, here the intelligence is completely lost. Because the reference is gone. We forgot the purpose, we forgot our identity, we forgot the rules, we forgot the previous experience. So you're going to reason. To reason, there has to be a point of reference. And the point of reference for devotees is Krishna. It's Guru. It's the Shastra. So once the memory is bewildered, there's no more point of reference. and the intelligence starts, you know, making wrong conclusions, wrong reasoning. And then number 8, buddhinashat pranashyati, meaning that due to all these things, there is degradation. This is how we become degraded. This is how we lose our position as a transcendentalist. And even from the part of materialistic people, this is how any person falls into sinful activity, which leads to degradation of the consciousness and degradation of even the human form. So when does that happen? When do we get caught in this contemplation? Because where is the beginning? Contemplation. So when does that happen? When there is already some desire somewhere. So we could say this is like there's a pushing from inside, from previous sanskaras. Something is there inside, you know, the stars move at some point, everything was peaceful. And then, you know, go to the astrologer, you say, I'm feeling funny. He says, yes, yes. The stars are moving in a funny direction. And then you can't control the mind. There are terrible desires coming inside. So yes, it can be something which is a pushing from within. Sometimes, which is due to previous sanskaras, yes? What else can it be? What is the cause of fall down? Bad association. This is one of the main causes. This is why Vaishnava is defined as one who gives up bad association. Asatsanga tyaga ei Vaishnava achar. And the behavior of a Vaishnava is that he gives up bad association. Association which is materialistic. So when there is bad association, though, we should always be very careful with whom we associate, from whom we accept gifts which are going to develop relationships and so on. We should be very careful where we eat, who is feeding us, who is giving us gift, with whom we sit when we chant japa. If we sit next to the sleeping one, naturally we will also sleep after some time. So very important is association. What else? Weak sadhana. Yes, weak sadhana. Because the secret of success is to keep the mind fixed on Krishna. As soon as we become lousy in our sadhana, immediately Maya, who is always looking through the window, said, oh, nice, now I can test. So therefore, again, good association. We should always seek the association of the devotees. If our sadhana goes down, we should run to the devotees and sit with them. Because we should never let our sadhana go down that much that then Maya will attack us. She will bring other objects in front of us and we will be bewildered. What else is the cause of fall down?
Offenses.
Yes, offenses. When we commit offenses, we lose Krishna's protection. The internal potency, it's kind of withdrawn because we commit offense and then we are exposed to the material energy. Yes. What else?
Negligence,
which is arises from tamogun. If we are not, we should be enthusiastic. Nectar instruction number 3. Utsaha, nischaya, dhairya. So if we lose our enthusiasm and we become negligent, slow, we are not careful with the rules and regulations, we become negligent, then we expose ourselves. Yes. Sometimes bad health becomes a cause of trouble, because when we are in bad health, then we become weak. And Maya is very heartless. She will attack. She will wait. As soon as there is a weakness, then she will enter. So, same, when we are in bad health, we should not remain alone. We should seek the help of the devotees. What else can cause... more material engagement over lack of balance between the spiritual activity and the material activity. Yes. If we don't have enough sadhana, if we do not engage in Krishna's service and there is too much material activity, then this may happen. We will lose track. Also, even in devotional service, over-endeavor. Sometimes we, too much service, over-active. From morning to evening, running, and forgot to, do the basic things. Forgot to do the sadhana, forgot to see Krishna, meditate on Krishna, just run. It's for Krishna, I'm running for Krishna, but I'm running. And running is in the mode of passion. So we, in order to serve Krishna, we use all the three modes. We engage them. We engage them in service. But we should always be careful that am I engaging the mode of passion, or is the mode of passion engaging me in Krishna's service? And when we over-endeavor, and again we lose the balance between the practical service and the sadhana and the rest, then we become exposed to imbalance. Imbalance will come within the mind. Another thing which is called is dangerous is also inaction, laziness, sitting around, doing nothing. Who's doing nothing? The body, not the mind for sure. Mind is ever active. So inaction. Then the mind becomes a devil's workshop, they say. It looks like we're doing nothing, but the mind cannot stop. So if we are not engaged in service, then that is also dangerous. Sometimes it's a mistake that causes fall down, just a little inattention. Because we should always be attentive. Prabhupada told us to be conscious. We should be conscious, always careful of what we are doing. And just a little inattention, and we get caught by Maya. Little inattention, in one sense is inattention towards Krishna and getting attention, giving attention to something else, meaning not being careful. Not being careful. Little inattention. Like you meet someone, you meet somebody, you meet somebody and you are not very careful. We see that always in our movement amongst the preachers. Preachers, they preach to some person opposite gender. And they are not careful. A little inattention. Inattention towards the rules, inattention towards the etiquette, a little inattention, and the next thing is caught. So one has to be very attentive about what one is doing and the etiquettes and all, because Maya is very powerful. We heard the senses are snakes. It's not a very good example. It's not a very good example. Very powerful, very sneaky. Do you see the snake coming? No, you don't see the snake coming. He's hidden in the grass. You don't see the snake coming. And he moves very fast. And once he has arrived, it's too late, bitten. Sometimes fall down is also due to the will of the Lord. But that's very rare. You can't just accuse the Lord. Oh, it was Krishna's desire. We hear it many times. It was Krishna's desire. What Krishna's desire? Krishna had nothing to do in there except that you forgot him. That's all. Instead of looking at Krishna, you looked at something in between. So, but it happens. In the Bhagavatam, we have, it's not really a fall down in one sense, but we have the story of Priyavrata, who was in the Himalayas or in the mountains, and he was completely renounced, and he was, you know, not completely away from material activities, and he was requested to lower his position and go back to being a king and running a family and, you know, all these things. So in one sense it looks like he came down, but it was under order. So it's not exactly the same. He was empowered to do some specific kind of service. So now the question is how to prevent. How to prevent all these things to happen? What does Prabhupada say is the secret of success? What is the secret of success? Involve the mind in Krishna's service. A little bit more than that. Sorry? Chant your rounds attentively. Yes. Prasadam? Disease? I think I spoke of that. Yeah, I said when we are sick, it can also cause weakness and therefore we fall prey to the mind. Yeah, yes. So what does Prabhupada say is the secret of success? It's the higher taste. Prabhupada, it's spiritual enjoyment. Not, you know, that only will be able to defeat material enjoyment. We have to enjoy one way or the other. I told you that one time Prabhupada was asking the devotees, what do you want? And all the devotees were saying, oh, we want Krishna praying. We want this, we want that. They were trying to give some nice answers, Krishna conscious answers. And Prabhupada said, no, you want to enjoy. You know? So, but there is enjoyment on the spiritual platform. And we know the mechanisms of this is that we are not self-centered. We serve Krishna, and that enjoyment will come, happiness will come, spiritual enjoyment will come. So this is very important, that in spiritual life we should get happiness. We should get enjoyment, ananda. If we are not getting that ananda, it is a dangerous situation. So every one of us, this is actually a challenge in our Krishna consciousness. It's a challenge for us. Because we begin on the path, and in the beginning, of course, Krishna consciousness tastes so different from blunt sense gratification that in the beginning the higher taste is very obvious. But after 10 years, 15 years in Krishna consciousness, that's when the test comes. Then, am I getting my happiness? Because I can't live without it. It's my nature. I am Satchitananda. I must be happy. Am I happy in Krishna consciousness? So this is the challenge, that we must find happiness in Krishna consciousness. So each and every person will find the taste in different, through different Krishna conscious activities. not everyone will find their taste in the same place. So could you give us some personal, what is your personal taste? Where do you find taste? What is it that makes you survive in Krishna consciousness? Where? Yes?
Chanting.
In chanting. Okay. Prabhupada says in chanting. Which kind of chanting?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Yes, who else? Akinchana.
Engagement.
In Krishna's service, in general. Any engagement. She's such a selfless soul. Service. Taste in service. Very nice. Yes? Kirtan. Yeah. And yeah, you feel like, wow, this is like, you know, very nice. Enjoyment through the kirtan. Yes, some people enjoy kirtan. Yes? Mangalarti. Wow, a saint. So, great enjoyment. Seeing the Lord in the morning. Yes, very nice. And?
Deity worship.
Deity worship. Some people are very fond of deity worship. Some devotees never ever ring a bell. They're not interested. Their taste is not there. But some devotees take all their taste from deity worship. They just enjoy when they are doing the dressing, bathing, aartis. There's so much happiness in their heart. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said that when a pujari worships, he should be smiling. That is Prabhupada explains. The pujari should be smiling. And who else? Where do you find your happiness?
Philosophy.
In philosophy. Wow. You must be happy now. Yes, so some devotees like to study, to understand things. And they really take pleasure in there. So it depends what elements are prominent in our conditioning, you know. Some are very transcendental, so they take happiness directly in something really like in meditation, in deep chanting. Some are intellectual, so their happiness comes from the study of the Shastra and all. Yes, very nice. And? Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam asvadan. Tasting Srimad Bhagavatam, Ananda in the Bhagavatam. Yes, like Radha Govind Maharaj speaks for hours, 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 hours. Doesn't he have a taste? He's absorbed in that. He's tasting each and every word, 20 pages of explanation. Amazing. Yeah. She likes book distribution. Yes, many devotees, imagine, all their life they distribute books. All their life. From the age they were 20, they joined, and now they are 60, and they're still distributing books and enjoying being on the street and stopping the people and making them take the books. They're so happy when they return. Yes? Any other spiritual enjoyment?
Cooking for the prasadam.
Cooking. Nice. Next is eating. Nice. Cooking for Krishna. This is also very maha ananda. Very great happiness when you actually cook for the Lord. It's a very personal service. You cook for the Lord or you cook for the devotees. You have to actually think of what the Lord will like. It has to be very nice and it should not be burnt. And then when you make the plate for offering, it has to be very clean and very good looking. And so there is a happiness. This is the happiness of the servant, of the personal servant of Krishna. Yes.
Discussing
Prabhupada's books among devotees. Yes. You like playing instruments? Or just learning? Learning. You like learning? and then being able to play. Okay, the artistic part of Krishna consciousness, we want to take part in the kirtan, we like to play instruments. Any other enjoyment? Yes? Parikrama. Yes. Parikrama. There is one lady, she did Brajmandal Parikrama 25 times. She took a vow. I met her actually the first time. I think she was there on the first one. No, she was there on the second one. In 1988, I was there and she was there also. And wow, it was such a taste when we do Brajmandal Parikrama. Very high taste. Very, very high taste. Visiting the places of pastimes, hearing the pastimes. So I liked it very much. But this lady liked it so much more. She took a vow on her first parikrama. She took a vow that I will complete 25 parikramas. And she did it. 25. Was it 25 or 21? I forgot. Anyway, it's a big number. It's 21 maybe. Maybe it's 21. Because now they are having their 25th anniversary. It's 21. She took a vow, 21 parikramas. And she did it. Varaha Rupa. And of course, after, you know, 15 parikramas, she started having problems. Age also changing, and problems with the knees. I've seen sometimes she could hardly drag herself, but she completed her vow. So much taste. So much taste. So this is the secret of success. Every one of us must find something in Krishna consciousness that we like to do, that we love to do, that we feel so good about doing. Then we will be safe. Then our mind is not going to start looking left and right because we will be satisfied. Higher taste in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada in his purport of 62, he gives the example of Shiva and that of Haridas. The example of Shiva here represents the example of an ascetic. Although we always say Krishna is Shiva is a great devotee. But in this particular case, Krishna, Shiva as an ascetic was not able to resist Maya. Maya, or rather Parvati, yes, she's Maya, she's very much Maya. She's Maha Maya, great Maya. So he was not able to resist the call of Maya. But Haridas Thakur, because he was absorbed in the chanting of the holy name, then he didn't mind. On the contrary, Maya became his disciple. So this is the victory of Krishna consciousness. Now, sometimes we are enjoying so much in Krishna consciousness, but is it Krishna conscious enjoyment? We should be very careful also. How do we know that when we are enjoying in the kirtan or we are enjoying something, you know, how to know that this enjoyment is produced by devotional service or I'm just on the material platform? How do we know? Yes? You want to do it more and you also want to chant more and you want to see Krishna more and you want, yes. But if it is material, then you're going to get lost in it and you lose the taste for other aspects of Krishna consciousness in a way that becomes dangerous to neglect certain aspects of Krishna consciousness, yes. All right. Yes. Yes. All right. So let us be careful of not falling into the idea that of material enjoyment in the name of Krishna consciousness. So, two things to avoid this fall. One is try to always keep the mind, keep Krishna around. Keep the pictures, keep the lectures, keep the murti, keep the devotees, surround ourselves with Krishna. So that is the first thing. And then as we see here that Krishna says that things begin with dhyayata, with the dhyana, then the next thing is to not let the mind wander. Never leave the mind idle. And indeed, Krishna consciousness, although it begins with engaging the senses, but just engaging the senses in Krishna consciousness is not enough. We must engage the mind, not just the senses. To engage the senses is the beginning of Krishna consciousness. But if we want to actually progress and remain in Krishna consciousness, then we have to very soon learn how to engage our mind. We have to read Prabhupada's books. We have to think how to expand the Hare Krishna movement, how to expand our service. If we do not engage the mind in thinking, feeling, willing for Krishna, then it will be engaged in something else. So very important to have a positive engagement for the mind. Maximize the hearing and the chanting, because this is, you know, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. And Dhyayato is some kind of Smaranam. We are remembering when we are contemplating. So what the type of remembrance in the mind depends on what we hear and what we speak about. So therefore, we have to learn that art of hearing a lot. And what we speak depends on what we hear. So the reading of Prabhupada's books has to be there. The hearing of classes has to be there. We cannot just run around like a headless chicken and, you know, year after year after year. We see that sometimes in our movement, people who have just been serving, never read Prabhupada's books. And then one day when there is a challenge in their life, they're lost. They don't know. Why is Krishna doing this to me? And they have no understanding, no philosophical understanding, no evolved intelligence, because our intelligence grows by hearing. And if we don't hear, then the intelligence sleeps. So we have to be ready for challenges in life. What is my mind going to remember when there is a challenge? Am I going to be like the parrot? Who was just chanting Hare Krishna when everything was going fine? And when the problem comes, he will remember something else. He'll remember he's a parrot, right? Yes?
Connected question. We come across a lot of people. There are two sectors. One, they say, serve. Whenever there is time, just serve. Then there's other set of people who say that put time in sadhana and then serve along with it.
Yeah.
So,
Buddhi Yoga. Action based on knowledge. So for action to be based on knowledge, knowledge has to be there. You can't just have action. Action based on knowledge. This is something that we are neglecting. There has to be hearing, there has to be sadhana and seva. If you just have seva, this may be good in the beginning. When new people come, they are not so, they can't hear so much. So the beginning of Krishna consciousness is engage the senses. Make them sweep, make them distribute books, make them eat prasadam, make them this and that. Like Prabhupada said, the first 2 years in Krishna consciousness, you can eat as much prasadam as you can. But that doesn't mean that this instruction is for the rest of our life. No, because after some time we must learn to be in goodness. So definitely we should serve. one who hears and after hearing is not enthusiastic to serve, actually he hasn't heard. Understand? So both have to be there. You hear, and then after hearing, you're enthusiastic to serve. And if you do the service, you should also be enthusiastic to hear. But in the beginning, we have to push ourselves a little bit because it's more difficult. It's easier to engage the senses than to engage the mind. This is the hard part of Krishna consciousness. But in the Nectar of Devotion, you will see that Rupa Goswami advocates the mental cultivation of Krishna consciousness. He says that Krishna Anushilanam, this Shilanam means to cultivate, to engage ourselves in service. By this way we cultivate bhakti. And this cultivation is by the physical senses, by the mind, and by the speech. By the tongue, by the speech. You chant and you speak about Krishna. You do something for Krishna, but the mind has to be fixed on Krishna. Otherwise, if we have no sadhana and if we don't hear, the next thing is, what will happen? No taste in service because no seva bhava. When we chant and we hear, we absorb spiritual energy, produce the sound itself, the holy sound of the scripture, the holy sound of the holy name that is non-different from Krishna, produces that internal potency, that spiritual potency. And when we are full of that spiritual potency, this is seva bhav, the seva bhav will be there. And we are going to do the service with the service attitude. I always give this example that you take two persons who are full-time devotees in a temple, you know, or one person, sorry, is enough. One person who is a full-time devotee in the temple, and that person, he's doing lots of service, lots of service, lots of service, lots of service. And then he sees that in one of the department, they have recruited a professional worker to operate the computer. And he's also doing lots of work, lots of work, lots of work, lots of work. What's the difference between the two? One is a brahmachari and the other one is a outside worker. Both of them are working very hard, very hard, very hard, very hard. What's the difference between the two?
First one should know that he is doing the service of Krishna, the other one is just getting money and doing the work.
The point is, one is getting money and the other one is not. This is, if you don't chant your round, this is what you will understand after some time. That I am running around so hard and at the end of the month I'm getting nothing, and this guy, he's also working and he's getting money. This is what will happen if we don't chant our rounds. Because we will not be working as a service. We will just be doing karma. And if you do karma, then very soon you will want the fruit. So this is very dangerous when we just do seva, 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 no hearing. It is a dangerous position. But it is true that we should serve. So both things are there. Prabhupada says other things in the purport. Don't let the mind wander. Engage the mind in maximize hearing and chanting, in thinking about the service. Sometimes devotees, they do their service in such a neglectful way. You know, no, every service should be perfected. We should perfect the service. We should want to do it so nicely. If we are cleaning the temple room, we should clean it so nicely. If we are painting the walls, we should paint them so nicely. We should meditate about the service. The service is non-different from Krishna. We should think how to serve Krishna. And of course, we should think how to serve Guru. follow his instructions. That's part of the secret. We heard Vyavasayatmika Buddhir Ekeha Gurunandana. We should develop a loving attitude, not become overwhelmed by, you know, when we restrict the senses too much, then what happens? The heart becomes hard. And then there is no love. But this movement is about love. It's about developing prema for the devotees, for Krishna. So we should be very careful to develop loving relationships. This is part of the sadhana. Rupa Goswami says, first engage your senses, engage your mind, accept what is favorable, reject what is unfavorable, and what is the next thing? Develop loving relationships. This is what we are here for. Krishna consciousness is all about relationships. We want to develop a loving relationship with Krishna, right? But this is the testing ground here. If we cannot love anybody around us, what's the proof we're going to be able to love Krishna? You know, at least we should start loving the people who are around us, who are devotees particularly. You know, this is the Madhyamadikari, makes distinctions. And he knows how to love the people, how to love the superiors, how to love the equals, how to love those who know less. So we should develop a loving attitude. What else does Srila Prabhupada say here? Another cause of fall down that Prabhupada is pointing out, I think, in the text 63, is immature renunciation or incomplete renunciation, meaning that the senses are not properly engaged. So, of course, this is the path of the jnanis, but in Krishna consciousness also, one of the causes of fall down is when we are not situated in the proper ashram, or we are artificially, trying to keep ourselves out of the engagement of the senses. So Rupa Goswami calls this Falgu Vairagya, false or incomplete renunciation. What means incomplete renunciation? It is this one, Vishaya Vinivartante. You keep the object of the senses away. But Prabhupada says, those who are without knowledge of Krishna consciousness artificially try to avoid the material objects. And as a result, although they desire liberation from material bondage, they do not attain to the perfect stage of renunciation. Their so-called renunciation is called falgu, or less important. Prabhupada gives an example. The devotee takes prasadam, like Sanchari, in Krishna consciousness. You understand? Take prasadam in Krishna consciousness. Whereas the non-devotee rejects it as material. What do the Mayavadi sannyasis eat? What do they eat? Boga? Yeah, they eat boga and then boiled. One of the things they eat is khichdi without salt. Without salt, many times, because they know that as soon as there is taste, then immediately you want more. The senses, and they know the philosophy also, that it begins with the tongue. That if the tongue gets too much active, then everything else will go upside down. So therefore, they eat very austere food. Khichdi, bina namak, without salt, tasteless. But what satisfaction do we find in that? So imagine when the tongue is so dissatisfied, you know, as soon as they see an object of the senses, immediately, the impersonalist, therefore, cannot enjoy life due to his artificial renunciation. And for this reason, a slight agitation of the mind pulls him down again into the pool of material existence. So again, Prabhupada is pointing out here that the sthita dhi muni has to be a devotee. The sthita pragya has to be a devotee. Because Prabhupada told us there are two kinds of transcendentalists. One is impersonalist and one is materialist. But the path of impersonalism is very, very dangerous. It is said that such a soul, even though rising up to the point of liberation, falls down again due to his not having support in devotional service. So this is a process here. Next, text 64 till the end answers the last question of Arjuna. What was the last question?
How does he walk?
Vrajeta kim? How does he walk? Which meant, how does he engage his senses? How does he engage his senses? So actually in 64, we're going to fly here. We're going to fly. Everything's flying. Now we are going to see a contrast between the path of engagement of the Matparaha, the devotee whose mind is fixed on Krishna, and the impersonalist or the Jnani who does not fix the mind on Krishna. So the last two verses was the non-devotee or the Jnani. So he falls. This is the risk for him. Now in 64, we have what happens to one who actually fixes the mind of Krishna. Let us read the verse. Raga dvesha vimuktestu vishayan indriyas charan atma vashya vidheyatma prasadam adigachati. So Sanchari should be happy. There is an important word in the verse, which is prasadam. Finally, all ISKCON devotees. Everyone rejoices when there is prasadam. So we have reached the point of prasadam. That's a good thing here. So what does this mean? But a person, so but means now we are talking of someone else, right? But a person free from all attachment and aversion. So who is free from all attachment and aversion? One who is fixed in Krishna. And he's able to control his senses and his mind through regulative principles of freedom, can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. So this verse actually points at the fact that personal endeavor is not enough. It's not enough. He says here, okay, he follows the regulative principles of freedom. So you endeavor to follow the rules and regulations. You endeavor, you know, to control the senses. But what else is required? The mercy, prasad. Prasad is the mercy. The mercy of the Lord. And therefore, only the Vidheyatma, the person who is submissive, who accepts Krishna, who becomes a devotee, who becomes a servant, that person will be able to control the senses. So we need the endeavor, we need the regulation. We have to be submissive to the rules and regulations, but this is not everything. The mercy of the Lord is required. And how does that mercy come? It comes through devotional service. So on one hand there are rules and regulations, and on the other hand there is the engagement of the senses in the service of the Lord. Although the, so now, unless the senses are engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is every chance of a fall. Now Prabhupada says, although the person in full Krishna consciousness may apparently be on the sensual plane, because of his being Krishna conscious, he has no attachment to sensual activities. So to be a sthitadhi muni in Krishna consciousness doesn't mean to be inactive. It means fully engaged, but with the mind fixed on Krishna. Bhurijan Prabhu remembers the example of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, when he was, he himself comments, we read that in the Lilamrita, when Prabhupada was in Delhi and he was publishing Back to Godhead, I was trying to publish some of his Bhagavatams. So Prabhupada said, I was going around like a, pen and chili man. Like he was very careful with the money. He was bargaining like a materialist with the printer, with the guy selling the paper, you know, with the shopkeepers. He was always bargaining. He was trying not to be cheated. He was trying to save. He was working so hard. He was saving money on the rickshaw so that he could put the money into the printing. So he was working so hard. The people who would see him were saying, Swamiji, why are you working so hard? Sannyasis usually, they don't work. That's the idea in India for many people, that sannyasi is one who has given up work. He doesn't work. Just goes around, begs a little bit, and then goes to sleep. So this is not the devotee. The devotee is fully engaged. But the activities are not material. And what makes the difference is that the mind is fixed on Krishna. And the purpose is to please Krishna. The will is not one's own will. The will is the will of Guru. The will is the will of Krishna. The devotee is active, executing the will of Krishna, not his own. That is the difference. So Prabhupada says, if Krishna wants, the devotee can do anything which is ordinarily undesirable. This is something in Krishna consciousness that, you know, sometimes we don't like to do something. I remember the first time I went on book distribution, I was not like Gita. The first time I went on book distribution, I thought, this is horrible. I don't like it. I'm a shy person. How can I stop people on the road like this, you know, and sell them a book? As you know, I couldn't understand why we should sell the book. Why not give them? So I tried selling a book. I was trying to stop the people. But I couldn't stop anybody. And the temple president who accompanied me to teach me, he said like this, so he made the demonstration. Excuse me, sir. And the guy stopped and blah, 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 thank you, goodbye. And he sold three books. But when I tried, first of all, the first challenge was how to stop them. How to stop all these people running on the streets? And once they stop, I forgot what I stopped them for. I was so absorbed in the endeavor of stopping them, I forgot what I stopped them from. Oh yeah, I got some book. After a while, what I did, you know, I managed. I sold one book and one cassette. And after that, I hid myself behind a pillar. It was a street with pillars, you know, covered in Europe, some many pillars on the street. I hid behind a pillar and I started reading the book. I thought, oh my God, what time did he say we have to spend here? I hid behind the pillar so that the teepee couldn't see me, because he was he dumped me there. He said, you saw, this is how to do it. And then he went like 100, 200 meters somewhere. And he was distributing books. I could see him from a distance, so I hid behind the pillar so that he couldn't see. But then I learned that the Prabhupada wants, and I understood, yeah, of course we have to distribute the books. I don't like to do that, but to please Krishna, I will do. Then I did the marathon and distributing books in the streets, in the shops, in the boats, in the everywhere, in the offices. You go everywhere and distribute books. Do you like it? In the beginning, no, I didn't like. But for Krishna, we do. So the devotee is ready to do anything for Krishna. And at the same time, he shall not do that which he would like ordinarily done for his own satisfaction. So for Krishna, the devotee can give up very easily certain things that we love doing. I love doing something, but my Gurudev says no. You know? So, therefore, to act or not to act is within his control, because he acts only under the direction of Krishna. So let someone else control us. This is the way to control the senses. Give the will to someone else, because otherwise, what we will do? We should use our willpower in executing the will of Krishna. But the overall will, we should accept the will of Krishna as the overall guiding principle of our life. We should accept Guru's mission as the overall direction for our life. This consciousness, when we achieve this, that we are able to accept, to put ourselves in the service of the Lord and accept the will of the Lord, Prabhupada says, this consciousness is the causeless mercy of the Lord, which the devotee can achieve in spite of his being attached to the sensual platform. So we are not pure devotees, but because we want to please Krishna, we want to please Guru, and we are submissive. We have at least that much quality that we try to submit. Sometimes in his purport, Prabhupada says, you just have to agree. Say yes. That's all. Just agree to serve Krishna. When Guru says, I would like you to do this, you know, don't start something, something, something. Just say, yes, I agree. I agree. Of course, we can discuss and, you know, but agree to serve Krishna. And once we make that step, this is what Krishna was saying, try to surrender. So? We heard you are you told us you are a very good cook. Maybe you can do like Vishal. Instead of buying the sweet or giving the donation, you can make it. Some sweet from Orissa.
Yeah.
All right, let us not defeat our study of sense control. Already everybody has an idea now. He wants juice, he wants oranges. Theory only. As we know, Mahaprasade Govinde. This is the greatest mercy. Okay, let us see. Now let us see what will happen when Prabhuji gives us the prasada. Prasade sarva dukhanam. Hanir hasyo pajayate prasanna chetaso yasyo buddhi paryavitishtate. This is what will happen. For one, thus satisfied in Krishna consciousness through prasadam, the threefold miseries of material existence exist no longer. In such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon well established. So upon, Prabhupada says, upon the achievement of the causeless mercy of the Lord. What is that causeless mercy? It is satisfaction. It is that higher taste, that satisfaction, being full within, that peace that arises from contact with Krishna, from engagement in His service. For such person, there will be, first of all, there will be sarva dukhanam hanir. So there will be destruction, or he will not experience the miseries of life. So how can this be? How is it that the person, in what way is the person fixed in transcendence not going to experience the miseries of life? It will not be, he will not be affected like a candle that doesn't, is fixed like a candle. So he's not affected because of being fixed, because of being absorbed. You know? Like sometimes we are absorbed in something and we catch a cold because it's getting cold and the fan is turning, but we are so absorbed that we don't feel the fan, but the body is feeling. So we catch a cold. So when we are fully absorbed in something, we lose track of the external perceptions. So if that can happen with a material engagement, what to speak of absorption in higher levels of Krishna consciousness, when the mind is actually thinking of Krishna? Of course, this will happen particularly when we chant japa. For those who are fond of chanting japa, when you chant japa and you follow the sound and become attentive, and there is, we will hear in the sixth chapter, a state when what happens outside is no longer relevant. So when that absorption comes, then we don't know whether there are mosquitoes, whether it's hot, whether it's cold. Due to absorption, you will not feel the miseries. What is something else? We saw also that Krishna, that Sthitadhyaya Muni sees everything as Krishna's mercy. That's another way that he will not feel the miseries of life. Because the miseries are not miseries. They are Krishna's mercy. He has a different vision. He knows that the miseries of life are meant to teach us detachment, to teach us something, to rectify some wrong mentality. Therefore, he doesn't see them as misery. He sees them as mercy. And he sees the presence of Krishna. So in this way, the miseries of material existence exist no longer. This is the transcendental platform. And his intelligence is fully fixed. It follows the will of Krishna. The intelligence does, is fully fixed, means it no longer responds to any callings of the mind. is fully fixed in Krishna's service. Now again Krishna contrasts again what happens to one who is not connected with Krishna. Verse 66. Nasti buddhira yuktasya nacha yuktasya bhavana nacha bhavayata shantir ashantasya kuta sukham. One who is not connected with the Supreme, this is called ayukta. Yukta or yoga means to be connected. So one who is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada makes clear that we understand, without which, can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind. And without transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? Okay? So this is a peace formula. Like there are some other places Prabhupada is quoting in this purport 529. Bhoktaram yagyatapasam savaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutama yadvamam shantim richasi. You are all ready for exam. So what is the peace formula? It is to just connect everything with Krishna. Be Krishna centered. Ishavasyamidam sarvam. That is also the peace formula. Seeing everything connected to Krishna. Dedicate everything to Krishna. So if we connect everything with Krishna, use everything in His service, once this connection is made, once we are meditating on the Holy Name, meditating on the service, meditating on the Bhagavatam, then there will be transcendental intelligence. And if we are not, then there will be no transcendental intelligence. And when the intelligence is not strong, then there will be no determination. And so the mind will not be steady. Intelligence also means, being connected with Krishna means we get guidance. We are directed. We get some guidance, some direction. And if that very direction, this is intelligence. This is the intelligence of the Lord. So He gives us intelligence. And if we don't have that intelligence, if we have no transcendental intelligence, then we will not know how to fix the mind. How to control the mind. What is favorable, what is not favorable, we won't be able to control the mind. So it will be restless. And when the mind is restless, no peace. When we preach, this is what the people complain about most. What do they say? Prabhupada used to say that, Swamiji, Shanti, Nay. No peace. There is no peace. I've got wealth. I've got so many things. I've got fame. I've got all kinds of mundane friends. I've got a big family. I've got so many things. Lekin, what do I don't have what? Shanti. That, this treasure I don't have. My mind is whirling around, full of anxieties, full of desires. I have no peace. And because there is no peace, even though I am rich, and I have family, I have neighbors, I have everything around me, I have a yacht, they call it, big boat. But because there is no peace in my mind, then what? There is no happiness. Because happiness is born from the mode of goodness. And disturbed mind means mind in the mode of passion, mind in the mode of ignorance. So that cannot be. Maybe there is sensual enjoyment. This is many times the people in the world, they confound, they mix up sensual enjoyment and happiness. But it is different. Sensual enjoyment is on the platform of passion. It is a flickering thing that Prabhupada compares to an itching. When there is itching sensation, then we are it's bothering us, so we are itching, and it feels good. So this is passion. This is sensual enjoyment in all kinds of ways through all the senses. This is material enjoyment. And it does not give peace, and it does not give any happiness. Prabhupada makes it clear, unless one is in Krishna consciousness, there is no possibility of peace. Disturbance is due to want of an ultimate goal. And one is certain, and when one is certain that Krishna is the enjoyer, proprietor and friend of everyone and everything, then one can with a steady mind bring about peace and not otherwise. Then Krishna says, Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness is a self-manifested peaceful condition which can be achieved only in relationship with Krishna. It's a nice sentence. It's the last sentence of the purport. What is Krishna consciousness?
Self-manifested
peaceful condition. It means it comes from within. It doesn't depend on how many friends I have and how many houses I have and how much money I have. It comes from within. It is self-manifested. It comes from our relationship with Krishna. That's it. Does this mean that after joining Krishna consciousness we will always be peaceful?
No.
No. Prabhupada also told us that this is not the ultimate goal, that just be peaceful. This is also the impersonalists. They are peaceful, they try to be peaceful, they want shanti, but for us we want Krishna's service done, and for this sometimes we have to take anxiety. An anxiety for Krishna. But deep, deep, deep inside, you know, if we are fixed in our relationship with Krishna, there will be a bottom peace, which is our conviction, you know, that we are doing the right thing. We are properly situated. We have an inner, very deep peace. This will be explained very soon. That the devotee's mind and consciousness is very, very deep. So on the top there may be waves of anxiety, but at the bottom there will be peace. There's a story in Juhu when there was that fight going on with the property. Prabhupada was fighting for the property. Then one time, I think, Tamal Krishna Goswami had gone. They were fighting, Giriraj Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Goswami, they were fighting with this man, and they were so much in anxiety and all. And one time one of them confessed to Prabhupada that I have so much anxiety about this matter that I'm having difficulty chanting my rounds, because I always have to think about what is to be done next to counteract all these things and actually get the land and all. And Prabhupada at that time, so that devotee was saying, I'm disturbed, Prabhupada, I feel disturbed, you know. And Prabhupada then said that, yes, I'm also disturbed. But this disturbance we should not take as material disturbance. This is something that earns us Krishna's mercy. So it is a good disturbance. Indriyanam hi charatam yanmanonu vidhiyate tadasya harati pranyam vayurnavami vambasi. So here Krishna is giving an analogy. It's an analogy which refers to the process of fall down. it illustrates the process of fall down. The analogy is that of a boat which is being swept away on the sea by the wind, on the sea or wherever. It's being swept away by the wind. As a strong wind sweeps away a boat on the water, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. So this giving more advice here, how to control the senses, and also telling us about the process, how we actually lose control. So who can tell me what is the wind? What does the wind... Wind, okay, a strong wind. And an uncontrolled sense. Any one of the senses, it becomes a breeze, becomes a wind. There's a vague, a pushing, it's like a wind. So the strong wind is the pulling of one of the senses. Yes. And what is the boat? Is the intelligence. Yes. So the boat was sailing peacefully. The intelligence was steady, fixed on the goal. And suddenly what happens? One of the senses gets attracted somewhere. And it's like a wind. And what is... So there is something missing here. If you imagine a boat, there will be the bottom part. And there will be what else?
The sail.
There will be the sail. So what is the sail?
Mind.
The mind. This is the mind. So the boat is the intelligence. The sail is the mind. And one of the senses is blowing into the mind. Hello? Didn't you see? Didn't you see? Look, look. One of the senses is blowing into the mind. So one of the ideas here is that we should engage all of our senses in Krishna consciousness and not be neglectful. Don't think that you can listen just a little bit nonsense or just watch just a little bit movie or just eat just a little bit bhoga. No. You know? He said, no, I'm a full-time devotee. I'm doing everything. I just come on, you know, just a little bhoga. Nothing. No, one sense, if it is misengaged, immediately it can pull the mind and create a storm in the mind, which is going to blow away the intelligence. We have this example in the Shastra. So this is a technique. Here, to engage the mind. And Prabhupada gave us this. When the new people come into Krishna consciousness, you know, we have to put all their senses in the seva. Quickly, everything. Open the mouth, open the ears, the nose, everything. You know, when they come in the temple, you have the incense and you have the prasadam, put some nice kirtan in their ears, put something in front of their eyes, give them something to do with their hands, take them somewhere. You know, engage everything. And then, you know, quickly, the mind is pacified. So some examples are there in nature, Prabhupada pointed that out, of animals that meet death due to one of their senses being very strong. In the human being, all the senses are balanced. There's not really one sense which is more developed than another. All the senses are developed. We have good ears, good eyes, good nose, good tongue, or good everything. But in the animals, it's not like this. Do you remember any examples?
Yes.
Yes? The deer. What's the sense most developed in the deer? The ears. He has a very good sense of hearing, and he likes nice melodious sounds. So the hunters, they play flute. They play flute in the forest because otherwise the deer is a very shy animal, very reserved. He doesn't come forward. But when he hears the music, is attracted through the sense of hearing. He comes closer, 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 and his ear is hearing, his eyes are not looking because the ear is going this way. And then the hunter catches him or shoots him. What's another animal? The fish. The fish, as we said, you see the particular form of a fish, begins with a tail, it ends with a mouth. So the mouth is very prominent in the fish, and that's how the fish dives, because he comes to catch the bait, and inside there is a hook. And then who else? The elephant, the most powerful elephant. You know, how does he get caught? By the sense of touch, means that he's actually attracted to the she-elephant. And that's how they catch this powerful... No one can control an elephant, a wild male elephant in the jungle. It can create havoc. It's very powerful. No one can catch. So what they do? They make holes in the ground, those who catch elephants. They make a huge pit in the ground. And then they take a she-elephant who is already in captivity from before, and they train the she-elephant with beautiful ears. So they take the she-elephant and they put the she-elephant in the forest just after the pit, you know, just other side of the pit that they make. And then they somehow or other push the elephants in that direction or make some sounds. So the male elephant arrives. And what does he see on the other side? He sees the beautiful she-elephant moving her ears. And what he does? He starts running. He starts running, thoughtless. Brain gone, everything gone. He starts running. And they also say that they send the she-elephant close. And then he starts running after her. And she's trained. So she takes him in the direction where the pit is. But she's trained. When she arrives near the pit, she goes around. But he doesn't. He goes straight in there. Because she goes around the pit and stands on the other side. And he falls. So this is how the elephant is caught, even though so powerful. And there is another one, which is the fly, the moth, that are attracted through the eyes, by the light. You can see in some seasons, you have a light outside, you have a fire. This is the season. The fire flies. They just enter the fire. They enter the fire. It is Hiranyakashipu when he was fighting with Hiranyakashipu when he was fighting with Nrisingadev. He was compared to one of these, the moth that enter the fire for their own destruction. So we have to engage all the senses, like Maharaj Ambarish. Tasmad yasya mahabaho nigrihitani sarvashaha indriyani indriyartebhyas tasya pragya pratishtita. Therefore, so now we have a conclusion here. Tasmad, this means we have a conclusion. Therefore, O mighty arm, one whose senses are restrained from their object is certainly of steady intelligence. In other words, what is the main symptoms of one who is fixed in transcendental consciousness?
Senses are restrained. He has steady
intelligence.
But what is the symptom? What is the symptom?
He is not attracted
to
anything. Yes? Oh, mighty arm, one whose senses are restrained from their object is certainly of steady intelligence. What is this? What control of senses, yeah. And we know this is one of the qualities of the guru, whose senses are controlled. So this is the main symptom of a transcendentalist, is that his senses are controlled. Prabhupada, and this is the result of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada gives an analogy. As enemies are curbed by a superior force, the senses can similarly be curbed, not by any human endeavor, but only by keeping them engaged in the service of the Lord. So, what is the superior force here? It's Krishna consciousness, the service of the Lord. This is the superior force which is going to dominate the force of the senses. Senses are very strong, but the force of devotional service is superior. The senses are enemies, but they will be conquered by the service of the Lord. One who has understood this, that only by Krishna consciousness is one really established in intelligence, and that one should practice this art under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, is called sadhaka, or a suitable candidate for liberation. So this is what Prabhupada is driving at us, and this is what Krishna is driving at us, based on verse number 61, that actually Buddhi Yoga is achieved through connection with Krishna, which means it is achieved through Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga is actually the perfection of Buddhi Yoga. When we contact with Krishna, then only everything can be controlled. Yani shasara bhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sanisha prashato mune. What is night for all beings in the time of awakening for the self-controlled? And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. This is a very famous verse. There are two types of people, which means two types of intelligence. There is material intelligence and there is spiritual intelligence. So those who have those who are intelligent in the material sense, they will be very expert in sense gratification. And we see this in the world. All the technology, this is meant for what? It's just meant for sense gratification. And one who is introspective and is awake for the cultivation of self-realization, this is someone who has spiritual intelligence. So this is the difference between the materialist and the spiritualist. Last time we were saying, who's crazy? Which one's crazy? So there, what does it mean, night and day? What is night for the spiritualist is day for the materialist, and vice versa. Meaning? Their activities are different. Their goals are different. Their habits are different. Their timings are different. They say always in South Africa there is one temple, I don't remember which one, which is located in a place where there is the night town, where there is all the pubs and the clubs and all that. And when the devotees go for Mangalati in the morning, there are so many people in the streets. But the devotees go this way and they are coming that way. The devotees just awoke and took bath. They are going to Mangalarti. And these people, they are now going to bed. They just came out of the clubs. And now they are going at 3 o'clock, the clubs close, and they go to bed. So this is the idea. What makes sense for a materialist doesn't make sense for a spiritualist, and vice versa. So we can find many examples of this. Okay, there are several verses left. I'm such a long winding teacher. Krishna, Krishna, we are going to do some self-study, I'm afraid. The next verse is very beautiful. It's again an analogy. Apuryamana machala pratishtam samudramapa pravishanti yadvat tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve sashanti mapnoti nakamakami. So this is again the peace formula, sa shantim apnoti. Who can achieve peace? Who can achieve peace? And who can achieve peace is, we will find out, a person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So what is the ocean here? It's the mind. And particularly a Krishna conscious mind here. The Krishna conscious mind is the ocean. And what are the rivers?
The desires.
Material desires. They are constantly entering the mind. The other day we were hearing the story of Yamunacharya, who was an acharya. Yet some thoughts of sense gratification would sometimes pop up in his mind. We shouldn't think that this was like 10 times a day. But he was mentioning this. Once in a blue moon, in the life of a spiritualist, even one who is very well situated, suddenly something pops up in the mind. So the materialist will run after the desire. For him, desire is life. He has to fulfill the desires. He thinks, if the desires are gone, my life is over. Desire is gone, my life is finished. But here, there is a comparison that in the ocean, what is the ocean? It's a very vast expanse of water. It is vast, and what is the other characteristic of the ocean? It's very deep. That's why it is steady. It is steady because it is very deep. So the sense control of a Krishna conscious person is deep rooted. It is very deep rooted in Krishna. It's deep rooted in sincerity to please the Lord. It's deep rooted in dedication to the spiritual master, to the mission. And because it is very deep, so that the mind cannot be disturbed. So we see in an ocean what happens, especially Prabhupada says in the rainy season. There are so many rivers entering into the ocean. So much water. But does the ocean become agitated? Meaning, does it come up and go off the shores? Sometimes. In Japan recently. But in general, people make their houses on the bank of the sea. Because they trust, they know that the ocean is not going to move. It is steady. So, but why is the ocean not growing? Why is the water in the, why is the ocean not overflowing? Even though so many rivers are entering, so much water is entering. Why is it not overflowing? Because it's very deep. And something else about the ocean.
It's vast.
In one sense, we can say that these rivers, the amount of water that's in the rivers is insignificant for the ocean. So Prabhupada is driving towards this, is that these material desires, they die when they arrive, they land into the mind of a devotee. They cannot disturb the mind because the mind of a devotee is also full of desire. A desire which overcomes material desires. It is the desire to serve. When the desire to serve is increased, then the material desires cannot disturb us. So this is the depth of the ocean. There's another thing with the ocean, is that the ocean has a friend. Who is the friend of the ocean? The cloud. Yeah? Anyone else? The rain? The moon? The sun. The friend of the ocean is the sun. What does the ocean do? It evaporates the water. That's why it doesn't come up. Because it evaporates the water. It goes into the clouds. And then it goes back on the land and so on. So one who also similarly has a friend named Krishna. If we have a friend named Krishna, then he will evaporate the material desires. As they enter our mind, he will evaporate these material desires. And they will not disturb us. So this is the idea of this analogy. So our duty is to become deep in Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada says something important in this purport. The proof of a Krishna conscious man, the proof is that he has lost the inclination for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. This is important, because otherwise we will think, it's not that there are no material desires. Material desires may always enter the mind. But what is not there in the devotee? The inclination to satisfy them. It is important. Why? Because the devotee is inclined to serve Krishna. And that inclination is stronger. That desire to serve Krishna is stronger. So this will correspond to something that you will study in the Nectar of Devotion called Anyabhilashita Shunyam. Rupa Goswami did not say that we should be free from all desires, all material desires, but he said we should be free from this inclination to satisfy the desires. The devotees of Krishna have no material desires, which means because they have a big spiritual desire, and therefore they are in perfect peace. Okay, I wanted to finish this chapter, but I don't want to torture you. So we can just finish this. You can study these two verses left, 71. Krishna is kind of concluding here. He's not saying anything much new in these two verses. And then the next time we will be starting chapter 3. That will be tomorrow. We'll be starting chapter 3. And there is a first section in chapter 3, which are again questions by Arjuna and initial answers by Krishna. It goes up to 9. And we will do that section. And then after that section, Krishna will again begin ascending the yoga ladder, starting from Karmakanda again. We'll review. We'll start from Karmakanda again and then go to Karma Yoga and then up and up. So I'll give an overview, not tomorrow because we have to finish these two verses plus do the next section. The next class will do an overview of the yoga ladder. Those who have a book called Surrender Unto Me, you can read about the yoga ladder. It's important to understand the yoga ladder. It will help us in our life in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.